Friday, snow, and a high of -4. Right now in the nation's capital, mainly clear and -10. Well, on Wednesday, there's a presentation at the McNabb Community Center called the 3E Crisis, Responding to the Converging Threat to Industrial Civilization. It's about a collision of environment, energy, and economic concerns. And the person who'll be speaking there is Paul Cheverka, and he joins me here in studio this morning. Hello, Paul.
Morning, Giacomo. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. Give us an idea what we're talking about here, about this 3E collision.
Okay. There are a number of headlines that everyone's aware of right now regarding various problems that we're facing. Everyone's heard about the fact that oil broke $100 a barrel recently. We've all been hearing about global warming and the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And I think anyone who's got an investment or two in the stock market is very aware that the financial system is under a bit of strain at the moment. What I've been doing for the last 3 years is taking a look behind the headlines, finding out what is really going on that's causing these issues. And what I've discovered is that these are really the most visible tips of a set of problems that look like they're all converging on us at the same time. Sometime over the next 5 or 10 years, and actually starting right now, all of these problems in the ecological, energy, and economic spheres are going to intersect. And all of them interact in such a way that they're going to make each other harder to deal with.
That's a pretty bleak picture you paint.
How
bad of a scenario could this be?
How bad it's always possible for things to get extremely bad. How bad do I think it will be? I think it's serious enough that everyone ought to be paying very, very close attention and starting to move in whatever ways they can personally to adapt or protect themselves from potential problems. It's obviously going to be different in different places in the world. Some places are going to be more vulnerable to it than others. Canada's actually in quite a good position, which is why I can bring a fair bit of hope to the table.
Okay, well, we're definitely going to want to talk about some hope, because this is a Monday morning show and we can't possibly just present negatives like this. But I guess why this presentation? Why at the McNabb Community Center bring people together to talk about this? It seems like something like everyone knows oil's has a peaked not necessarily peaked, but is surpassing $100 a barrel level. We hear about the ecological problems. We hear about the economical problems of the oil. Why bring people together to McNabb Community Center to talk about this?
Well, the main reason to bring people together is, there are really two reasons. One is that most people's awareness of the nature of the crisis, or the various crises that we're facing, is driven by newspaper reports, by television reports, and those are necessarily fairly shallow. They don't get into a lot of the details, and they really don't present the whole scope of the issues and how they interact. The convergence is really the big problem. And so by bringing people together, you can spread the message about some of the deeper aspects of the crises that we're facing. And at the same time, you get people talking. The talk is being presented by a grassroots activist group that is devoted to getting communities discussing ecological, environmental, and social justice issues. And it's only by communicating with each other and sharing ideas, sharing knowledge, that we're going to enhance our ability to cope with these sorts of things.
So safe to say then, at this event on Wednesday, it's not just going to be you talking about all the problems that could happen.
Absolutely not. No, it's going to start with an hour presentation from me in which I'm going to talk about the problems and how serious they are. I'm going to talk about what individuals can do to address these problems, and I'm going to talk about how communities can address these problems, because it's really in small communities that we're going to find our most effective response. Then there's going to be, after that, an hour for people to ask questions, kick around ideas, poke at the ideas to see how serious they are, contribute their own perspectives on what they can do, these sorts of things.
Okay, well, let's spend some time on what people can do, because I mean the whole thing about the problems and things, there's a lot of information out there, and if people spend the time writing it, they can certainly come to these conclusions.
Absolutely.
On it. Some may not agree, of course, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But as far as what people can do, and it seems like you really do put a lot of faith in people at the grassroots level to handle this.
Absolutely. The reason that I emphasize individuals and community action is because I've from the examination I've done, I don't think that governments are, especially democratic governments, are well situated to address the problem. They need to get elected. They need, therefore, to get a lot of votes. And they need to get votes from a lot of people who really are more concerned with their personal lives and whether they've got a job next week than they are with big picture issues like energy depletion and ecological problems. So what this means is that in order to get the votes, governments need to steer their course between the icebergs as opposed to raising alarm bells and turning people off. So what this means is that we really shouldn't be looking to governments for substantial action. One of the points I make in my talk is that the crisis is happening right now, and in some ways it's going to be too late to prevent it. So what we need to do is protect ourselves, and we can do that by individual action. We can do it by...
But are we talking like individual action of just everyone has to kind of assess their carbon footprint and those kind of things? That's
where it starts. There are laundry lists of things that you can do out there on the internet in terms of driving less, insulating your house, moving closer to work, reducing your consumption of meat because it's more effective to eat grains, things like this. There are all kinds of laundry lists of actions that individuals can take. What I'm more interested in is the fact that we group together in communities. Communities have been historically the most effective way that that people have organized themselves for millions of years, and pool our resources, pool our knowledge, and reinforce each other's commitment to living more effective lives. One of the points that I make in my talk is that reducing your carbon footprint, doing all these things that are necessary to address ecological and energy issues, doesn't require reducing your happiness, doesn't require reducing your standard of living particularly. In fact, what you can do very easily is make your life happier, more productive, at the same time use less energy, use less of the world's resources, and it's actually by community action that we can do that. By banding together, we always have more power than we do as individuals.
I'm speaking with Paul Chaferka, who's going to be hosting or speaking at an event on Wednesday, January 30th at the McNabb Community Center called the 3E Crisis, Responding to the Converging Threat to Industrial Civilization. I'm interested, Paul, you mentioned the word happiness and how that can change for mm-hmm. people. You're an example of that, aren't you?
Absolutely.
So tell me the Paul of 4 or 5 years ago.
The Paul of 4 or 5 years ago is quite a bit different than the one who's sitting here today. I was in high tech for a long time, and 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I was living in Kanata Lakes in a 3,500 square foot McMansion, just two of us. I was driving a BMW to work back and forth every day. I lived the classic throwaway lifestyle. I was Mr. Consumption himself. I didn't even believe the global warming existed.
Did you know you were a consumption person at that point?
Absolutely I did, but I interpreted that as a good thing.
Okay.
I saw it as doing my part to keep the economy humming, and it was my just reward for having worked hard in my career to that point. This was the natural order of things.
You felt a sense of entitlement to that lifestyle?
No question. So then a few things started to happen. One of the big ones was related to my disbelief in global warming. I had a friend who said, look, you're a scientist, you're an evidence-based guy, why don't you look at the evidence? And you might want to re-examine your position. So I spent about a month reading various books, searching the internet, looking at what the science actually said about global warming, and came to the conclusion that I'd been wrong. That in fact global warming was real, that it was being caused by human activity, and oil was the result, was the cause.
What was the feeling at that point? What happens in your mind when you realize that?
It's a very destabilizing feeling. People describe it as a thunderbolt realization, and it really is. That all of a sudden your world turns 180 degrees on its axis, and you realize that you've been wrong about a very fundamental aspect of reality. It's a startling moment. It's called an epiphany, and it really was very much that.
So tell me about the Paul now, then.
Okay, so what happened from there is I started looking at various other issues and started asking, where does that carbon dioxide come from? And all of a sudden I was looking at peak oil and all of the other issues fell out of it. So I realized I had to make some changes. The Paul now lives in a 1,500 square foot bungalow in inside the city. I take public transit to work every day. I've traded off the BMW for a used Jetta TDI, a diesel that gets much, much better gas mileage. I don't grow any flowers in my yard. It's all been converted, or a lot of it's been converted to a vegetable garden. I now buy my electricity from a green electricity supplier.
So by no means have you gone like fringe and
oh, absolutely not. No, okay. You don't need to go fringe to make effective changes in your lifestyle.
And apologies to our listeners who may take that personally, by the way, because we just mean to the extreme.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. No, you don't need to get extreme. You can make significant changes without really disrupting your lifestyle at all. I still go to work every day. I still have a car. I still have a house. But I've become very aware of all of the small issues in my life. For instance, I never used to compost. I now compost all the kitchen waste. I never used to recycle particularly. I now do that.
And how do you feel about yourself now? How's your happiness?
My happiness quotient has gone through the roof, frankly. When I look back, what I realize is that the consumption was really covering up an underlying sense of bleakness. It's kind of cliche to say that, but it's in fact true. The reason they're cliches is because they're true. And there was a pointlessness to my existence before that is now gone. Now I've got a purpose in life. Now I can see that I'm truly contributing to the planet as opposed to simply taking from it. That's a very, very, very comforting feeling.
So now we know where your hope in individual action comes from, very much from yourself. Tell me more then about people gathering tonight. Will there be or Wednesday night? Will there be an opportunity for them to participate in some group community groups that'll be there sharing some information on some
It's
actions?
Primarily going to be a discussion, a general discussion following my talk. There's certainly going to be people there from ACT City who are well tied into the various community groups that are working in environmental and social justice areas around the city and in the region. And there's going to be no end of opportunities for making contacts like that.
Okay. You mentioned that. I just kind of want to bring things back now to an end, because here's a group getting together. Mm-hmm. It can build into something and it can have some impact. But we started by saying that we can't necessarily look to our governments for leadership because of electability issues, though.
Right.
But do you see it within Ottawa, within the Ottawa scene, that this is going to become a point where politicians are talking sustainability more and really looking to be more sustainable than their competitors?
I've been looking at the municipal political scene now for a couple of years, and frankly, what I see is disappointing. When I compare Ottawa's response to the response of other cities, even small towns like Dawson Creek in British Columbia that have extremely strong green programs, various cities in the United States that are strongly involved in peak oil preparations, strongly involved in ecological and environmental activities, Ottawa's commitment has been virtually zero. There are three or four city councillors that are dedicated to the proposition, but the general thrust of city government here is toward development, and it's sustained development, not sustainable development. So in the face of that, in the face of the federal government that we have that is totally tied into the Alberta oil industry, the provincial government that is promoting nuclear power as opposed to renewable power, I really think that individual and community action is the only way we're going to see real progress.
Paul, let's let our listeners know about Wednesday's event and some of the details.
Okay. Well, it's going to be at 7 o'clock at the McNabb Community Center. That's at 180 Percy Street. It starts at 7 o'clock. The doors open at 6:45, and it's being sponsored by a group called ACT City Ottawa. ACT City stands for A Community Talks, and they're a grassroots organization dedicated to promoting dialogue between citizens and community groups about environmental and social justice issues. And so there'll be a one-hour talk and a one-hour discussion to follow.
And I think they've got a website. It's a little tricky, though. I'm just going to tell you probably people's best bet is to Google Axe City, Ottawa, and they'll get the site there, thanks to the good folks at Google. And thank you to you, Paul, for speaking with us today, and all the best on Wednesday for your presentation.
Thank you very much for having me, Giacomo.
I've been speaking with Paul Trafirka, and again, that presentation is called The 3E Crisis, Responding to the Converging Threat to Industrial Civilization. But there will be hope shared at that event. We have been assured. It's 8:24, still coming up. We're going to have Lucette DeCunha around 8:30 with her weekly arts report.